From the Mayflower Hotel in Washington, CBS Radio presents an address by the President of the United States, who is speaking at the 70th annual meeting of the National Civil Service League, a dinner being held in conjunction with the Society of Personnel Administration. Mr. Truman will be presented by Mr. Nicholas McKelly, President of the National Civil Service League. Mr. Kelly.
President of the United States. Mr. Chairman. Distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure to be here with you this evening. I have a deep appreciation and admiration for the loyal, hardworking, and able men and women who make up our civil service. In all kinds of government. In fact, I know government from precinct to president. I know it in the county. I know it in federal, in state, legislative, and executive. But I've never known a better group of people than the civil service employees of the federal government of the United States. I've been interested in public service for over 30 years. In fact, on the third day of next January, I will have been in elected public office exactly 30 years. Ever since I was first elected a judge of a county court in Jackson County, Missouri, I've been interested in government. Now, don't get the idea that a judge of a county court in Missouri knows anything about law. He doesn't. It's an administrative office. Let me tell you something I've learned in my 30 years in public office. Good government is good politics. And the best politics is what is best for all the people. Of course, there are very important differences between being an elected official and serving in the civil service. Our elected officials are politically responsible. They must answer to the people, and they must make the major policy decisions. The role of our civil servant is to carry out these policy decisions, and sometimes we have a terrible time getting to do it. But there is a great bond of public service holding both groups together. Both are working together for the good of all the people of this great country. The people are entitled to the most efficient public service we can devise. The way to provide such service is to make sure that all government employees, except those in top policy jobs, are under the merit system. It has consistently been my goal to bring this about. I'm happy to report that the goal is now in sight. We've made great progress since 1881, when the National Civil Service League was organized. Then there was virtually no civil service. By the turn of the century, 50% of federal employees were under civil service. And now, over 93% of all federal employees in the United States are under the competitive civil service. This is the highest percentage in the history of our government. That's a remarkable achievement. But it is by no means the whole story. In addition to our regular civil service, special merit systems have been set up for various agencies, such as the Atomic Energy Commission, the Tennessee Valley Authority, the Federal Bureau of Investigation. When these are taken into account, the number of employees covered by the merit system comes to 99% of the total. I'm proud that during my term of office, we have extended the merit system to cover virtually all federal positions. Our career civil service is still a long way from perfect, but it is in better shape than it's ever been before in the history of the country. We're going forward with our plans to eliminate the last remnants of the patronage system. But these efforts meet with the same kind of resistance, the same kind of hypocritical opposition that has greeted every effort to make the federal service better. The patronage seekers are still on the prowl. Just a few weeks ago, for example, I sent to Congress my plan to reorganize the Bureau of Internal Revenue. The purpose of this plan is to place under the civil service all the positions in the Bureau, with the sole exception of the Commissioner of Internal Revenue. In short, this plan takes all our tax collectors out of partisan politics. Of course, it also takes that much patronage away from the members of the Senate. You know, I was in the Senate 10 years. I know how they feel. What a howl of anguish went up from the patronage boys. Just as you might expect, those who cried the loudest were the very ones who had been making the most noise about the misdeeds of political employees. If you want to know who these gentlemen are, get out the congressional record and read the list of those who voted against the plan. Well, we fought them and we beat them. We won a major victory for the merit system. On April the 10th, I sent three more reorganization plans to the Congress. Reorganization plan number two would take postmasters out of partisan politics by abolishing their requirement that they be appointed by the president and confirmed by the Senate. Under reorganization plan number three, all political offices in the Bureau of Customs would be eliminated, and the work would be carried on by qualified civil service appointees. Reorganization plan number four would place the positions of the United States Marshals under civil service. You hear a bigger roar about that than you did about the collectors of internal revenue. When these three reorganization plans are approved, only a handful of positions will remain outside the merit system. But that doesn't mean the job of the National Civil Service League is finished. Far from it. We've created a career public service throughout the federal government. Now we must fight to protect and to keep it. There's a new attack on the civil service, an attack which holds more dangers than the spoilsmen. This new attack is an attempt to gain political ends by the shameful method of defaming and degrading the people who work for the government of the United States. To understand exactly what we're up against calls for another lesson in politics. The normal operation of our democratic system, every administration is held to account every 4 years for its policies, its programs, and its conduct of the government. That is as it should be. In recent years, the programs and the policies of the administration in office have been upheld time after time by the popular verdict. Today, the time for another accounting is approaching. and the opposition is becoming rather thin, is becoming rather frank. They know that they cannot persuade the people to give up the gains of the last 20 years, but they think they can undermine those gains by attacking the men and women who have a job of carrying out the programs of the government. And so they have launched a campaign to make people think that the government service as a whole is lazy, inefficient, corrupt, and even disloyal. Now these confusers do not for a moment believe their own charges. The government servant is not the real target of their attack. They're engaged in a ruthless, cynical attempt to put over a gigantic hoax and fraud on the American people. They say, let's make the public think that the government service is full of crooks and thieves. Let's create the impression that all public servants are bad. Let's tell the people that the government servants are reds. Let's confuse by innuendo. Let's confuse innuendo with fact, rumor with evidence, charge with guilt. If the real people get mad enough and confused enough, we won't have to take a position on any of the great public policy issues. We can sneak into the office at the back door. Now that's what they think we can do, but I'll tell you right now, they're not going to be able to do it. They tried it in 48, much to their sorrow. There's only one effective way to deal with this attack, and that is to wage a campaign of truth. Chairman Ramspeck has courageously started such a campaign, but he needs the help of all of us. He needs the help of every government employee in order to let the people know that the government employees are honest men and good workers. It's time to blast the rumors, the false inferences and the innuendos, and the downright lies about public service. Take the charge that most federal employees are unnecessary. This is completely untrue. It's just as false as it can be. 50% of our civilian employees are in the Defense Department, engaged directly in military activities of the Army, Navy, and Air Force. They man our arsenals, shipyards, supply depots, and weapons laboratories. Most of them are mechanics, steel workers, riveters, electricians, and other artisans. In addition to that, another 28% of the total are in the Post Office Department and the Veterans Administration. That adds up to 78% in just three agencies. The remaining 22% perform all the other functions of the government, staffing such vital agencies as the FBI, the Atomic Energy Commission, the Soil Conservation Service and Reclamation, the Employment Service and Public Health. This 22% covers a great many peacetime activities of the government, as well as all the national security activities outside the Department of Defense. Except for these national security emergency activities, employment in the normal peacetime operations of the government has been cut back since Korea. Now, you never hear that. You won't see that in the paper, and unless you listen to me or the radio, you'll never find out that that's true. The people who carry on these operations are not useless bureaucrats, but they are so much. They're performing necessary services for the good of the American people, for their protection and welfare. They are performing services which the American people have demanded, and the Congress has authorized by law.